All right. First thing you gotta do is convince yourself that nothing can stop you. You gotta believe that plane you're in is like a suit of armor, like an Iron Eagle that nothing can penetrate.
This one's for you, Chappie.
On the flight deck, listeners are manning up for the podcast launch. It's time for all unnecessary shows to clear the airwaves.
You're listening to The Hangar Bay, a podcast dedicated to the latest military flight simulation and hardware news. From developers to the community and everything in between, The Hangar Bay will get you squared away.
Welcome down to The Hangar Bay, your source for the latest news that every military flight simulation pilot can use. Today is Saturday, March 30th, 2024. I'm your host, Umanji, and thank you for joining me for another episode of The Hangar Bay. I hope each and every one of you had a wonderful week in the virtual skies. As you may have noticed, this week's show started off a bit differently than usual. That was intended to honor the actor Louis Gossett Jr., who passed away at the age of 87 on Friday. He had a distinguished career, which included winning the Best Supporting Actor Oscar for his role as Gunnery Sergeant Foley in An Officer and a Gentleman, the first black man to win that award. However, I wanted to recognize the fact that as a child of the 80s and 90s, Lewis was and will always be Colonel Chappie Sinclair, United States Air Force. You know, Iron Eagle involved a preposterous plot, cheesy dialogue, but fun fight scenes and an incredible soundtrack. And in short, I loved it. I loved it as a kid. I love it now. And I love Chappie. So thanks, Chappie. This one's for you. Now, before we get started, just a reminder that you can always follow along with this week's show notes by visiting thehangarbaypod.com. You'll find this week's show notes and the notes for every episode we've done so far. You can also find the video version of this show on YouTube or on Spotify, where I roll through the notes as we go along. Just makes it a little bit easier for you to keep track of what we're discussing. That said, with that out of the way, let's get things started like we do each and every week around here with the flyby. Now, the flyby is where we aim to cover the highlights from this week's news in 60 seconds or less. And that's going to definitely be doable this week because we don't have a lot of specific news, even though we do have a lot of great content in the show this week. That said, starting things off, we've got Eagle Dynamics, who opened up the Afghanistan map for pre-orders, surprising us with not one, but four purchase options that will be released over the course of the next year, causing the community to definitely have a large series of reactions to that news. Honor 12 added to his SimPit-focused Etsy store with the release of an F-14 ACM panel. And then finally, Verpal has a 10% off sale this weekend for the Easter holiday, which lasts through the weekend. That will end on Monday, April 1st, 2359 UTC. So that was really the bigger stories for this week. As I mentioned, generally light on news, but I do hope you'll stick around for the full show because we're going to cover these stories in more detail as well as a lot of great content from the community members this week. So on that note, let's dig in, and get things started with the developers.
Hey everyone, Wags here.
So in the developer news section, we normally bring you the latest happenings from game developers and related third parties. And we'll definitely do that this week with a few different items as well thrown in the mix. But starting things off, it's the biggest story we're talking about in military flight simulation community this week, and that's the DCS Afghanistan map pre-order. Surprise! So we mentioned it last week and we talked about how, hey, well, sounds like we might be getting the release a little bit sooner than anticipated. Well, Eagle Dynamics didn't wait very long before they sprung the pre-order on us. So in short, the DCF's Afghanistan map is available for pre-purchase and it's planning to enter early access and be available for download in June 2024. The surprise here is it's not just the single DCS Afghanistan map. Well, maybe that is the surprise. It is and it isn't. Essentially, there's two pre-order options available for the same map right away. So off the start, you can order the DCS Afghanistan map like you always would. Right off the start, it's your typical map. But the unique entry this time around is a sub-module, if you will, or specific regions of the map. So Eagle Dynamics has decided to essentially divide the map up into three purchasable subregions, if you will. So there'll be Southwest Afghanistan, East Afghanistan, and North Afghanistan. So you can purchase each one of those modules independently, two of the three, all three, in which case you might as well just get the full map. But I guess the initial question that comes to mind is, why are they doing this? Well, what they say in their FAQ, which I have linked in the show notes, and I highly encourage you to read. I think that would resolve a lot of the confusion and drama we saw associated with this announcement earlier in the week. But they cover a lot of things in really specific detail. Now, whether you like those answers or not is up to you. But they state the why for this is, given the immense size of the territory of Afghanistan, they divided up the map into the three aforementioned regions that I mentioned, Southwest Afghanistan, East, and North. Each of these maps will give you access to the entire map, though. That's the key thing to understand. When you purchase one of these subregions, that you're just essentially buying a high fidelity of the version for that map. So picture it like a U.S. state. For example, we could be making a map of the eastern United States, and it includes Virginia, Maryland, and Pennsylvania, for example. I buy the whole East Coast map. I get all of that. But maybe I'm only from Virginia and I only care about Virginia. So I could also buy the smaller version, which gives me all the detail I want about Virginia. But the other areas, Maryland and Pennsylvania, I still get access to those as well. They're just not modeled in as high a fidelity, visually speaking. And we'll come back to that in a second. The regions, as they're divided up, will be released in approximately 3-month intervals. So they're starting with the Southwest region. That's why it's available for pre-order right now, along with the full map. They say that reason behind that is because it's the most complete today, and it'll be released first. So the main point here is they didn't want to hold up the release of the full map by waiting for the other regions to come online with higher fidelity. Their thought is, well, let's release things now, and we can add the fidelity as we go along. So one note to add on here is, as I've already mentioned, if you purchase a sub-region, you still get access to the full map. You just don't get it at the highest level of graphical detail. So if I purchase the full map, say I want the entire thing, my buddy only purchases Southwest Afghanistan, that my buddy could still fly on the entire map in single-player and multiplayer missions. They just don't get that same level of graphical fidelity. So all purchases, regardless of a region or the entire map, get access to the same map. It'll be the same icon in-game. The only difference is what areas you see in high detail. So hopefully I've done a good job describing that. That's kind of the bluff in terms of content. Again, I highly encourage you to go read the FAQ. Some other details I want to cover, as this is the main story of the week, so I want to spend a significant amount of time on it, is the pricing. So I think this still represents good value. From where I'm coming from, as someone who, I'll be honest, I'm one of the whales of the DCS community, right? Like, I'm one of those guys who generally buys most things that come out. I like to support the game. This is one of the major flight sims I enjoy, so I want to support the products I enjoy. So I will probably purchase the full map, which is available for pre-purchase price right now of $49. That's 30% off sale. If you want to wait until the map is released before you purchase it, at that point, you'll be able to get it for 20% off. That's $56. And that early access price will continue all the way through the development process until it's finally released. And then full price will be $70. Now, they have said they plan to release the submodules in roughly 3-month intervals. So if they keep to that timeline, in theory, we could be seeing a final release roughly 6 months down the road, maybe potentially December. Not sure. We'll see how that works out. So there you go. $49 now. $56 if you wait until it's released into early access, and then $70 if you wait until it goes to final release. What about those submodules? What about Southwest Afghanistan? Well, that's where things get interesting. You can purchase that right now for $24, so essentially 20% off the full price of the module or the sub-region, which will be $30. So quite a bit of savings there. If you're looking, you only care about the Southwest region, the airports that are in that area, that's a significant cost savings. And what I like about that is, you know, one thing the community talks a lot about is the fracturing of the community with these maps and how it gets expensive for some folks to pick up these maps, and then it diminishes the multiplayer community from map to map, and we just get too segregated from one another from an economic standpoint or what people are interested in. Well, this does provide you with a lower cost to entry. If your buddy doesn't, for whatever reason, want to invest the full amount for a smaller, less than 50% of the price of the full map, you can buy the slice, You get in, and then boom, you have access to the full map. Now, the remaining region add-ons will not have a pre-purchase price going forward. They'll be $30 each time they come out. So when East and North come out, they're $30 a pop. And the other thing they noted in their FAQ was, if you buy one of the regions and then you change your mind later on and want the full thing, you're not going to get a discounted price. So sometimes sales on Steam work that way, or sometimes Eagle Dynamics has done that in the past. They're not planning any bundled discount here. So if you think you're going to want the full map, my advice would be to probably purchase it now. But, you know, that's your decision. You do what you'd like to do when it comes to your purchases. But that's how pricing works. So I mentioned the when. The map is set to debut in June 2024. So that's when, regardless if you purchase the whole thing or just the Southwest Afghanistan region, that's when it will go live. So we'll have access to the full map at that point, is my understanding. It's just the only region that will have high fidelity graphics will be that Southwest region. And then finally, why the split? I kind of mentioned that earlier. They go in to say it allows a lower entry price if the user wants to only fly in one region. And since the regions of the map are being completed in stages, with the Southwest being ready first, boom, we get access to it earlier than we would if we waited for the whole thing to be done. So finally, the big talking point comes down to, okay, what does this higher level of fidelity actually mean? So in the FAQ, they mentioned higher level of detail when it comes to these region by region areas. What they mean by that is more detail refers to the terrain textures, so you'll have more detailed road networks, enhanced city scenes, airfield scenes, cultural monuments, things of that nature. The thing I want to highlight, though, is that this is the same technology currently being used on the Normandy 2.0 map. So if you remember, they originally released the Normandy 1944 map. Then they came out with the upgraded Normandy 2.0. They allowed people to purchase the improved graphical standpoint version of the map. And if you didn't want to, you didn't have to. You can both fly on that map. It's just older owners who did not upgrade see a lower detail map. And the way that's worked over there is the finer details of the map will be different, right? A city might not look as pretty, but it's still going to have the major features, the buildings, the elevations are going to be the same, the terrain in terms of where rivers are, where bodies of water are, where mountains are, that'll all still be the same. Now, a lot of people have rightly questioned, what effect will this have on missions, campaigns, and multiplayer scenes? Eagle Dynamics says if you're flying in a region where you do not have access to the highest level of detail, it may be that the creator of that mission or campaign references a world object you will not see. Otherwise, there will be no effect. Now, I know some people have jumped on this and rightly pointed out that that's a big, you know, question mark. It's hard to know what else to say other than we're just gonna have to wait and see how that plays out. I personally don't think that's going to be a huge factor. I mean, yes, it's entirely possible there will be a tree in game at a certain spot that the high fidelity person will see and the low fidelity person won't see. You know, I don't know. I can't argue with that. Do I think that's going to have a significant gameplay impact? I don't. But, you know, that's me. Again, we'll have to see how it plays out in person. I'm choosing to be optimistic about this in terms of I like the accessibility for the community. I like getting access to the map earlier, and I'll take Eagle Dynamics up on face value in terms of that the tech they're going to be introducing with this map is going to be pushing the game to its limits. So they're making some of these changes in order to allow people to pick and choose what works for them and what works for their rig. You know, have they burned bridges in the past with some of their early access programs, specifically the Super Carrier? Still waiting on you there, the Super Carrier module. Sure. But, you know, this is a game I enjoy. This is a hobby I enjoy. I like to be optimistic about these things. I have to save my pessimism for the rest of everyday life, I suppose. So we'll all be optimistic here. I'm excited about the map. And most importantly, the video for it looks fantastic. So excited to get our hands on this in June. So I think I beat that up enough to death. I just wanted to cover some of those things in detail because I saw lots of confusion in the community. Hopefully that walkthrough helped those of you who are interested in understanding more about that. So again, check out the FAQ, find all the details there. So as that was the main piece of developer news for the week, hence why I spent the most time on it, I didn't want to leave you empty-handed with developer news, and I didn't really know where to feature some of these other items I want to talk about, so I threw them in here. And specifically, I want to highlight two new games. Well, not necessarily new, they've been around for a little bit, but games that have popped up on my radar recently that I thought some of you might be interested in as well. The first of that is Thunder Helix. So we're going to do a little bit of an indie developer spotlight right now. So Thunder Helix is developed by David Walters, and it's available on Steam. It's in early access right now. It's $20. And I was going to write a detailed description of what is Thunder Helix, but I'm going to give credit to Damson on Twitter. That's at Damson was taken. I've mentioned him before. He's a self-proclaimed retro flight sim fanatic. Great follow on Twitter. Highly recommend you check him out. He left a fantastic review on Steam, and Damson, I'm going to straight plagiarize it, man, because I couldn't have said it better myself. So Thunder Helix is a love letter to the flight sims of the 90s and the DOS era. So if you're like me, I mean, man, we're going total nostalgia this week between Iron Eagle and now we're talking about 90s and DOS era. Anyway, this game is a mix of some classics from that era, such as LHX, Attack Chopper, Desert Strike. I was a huge fan of Desert Strike. And Gunship 2000 for some of its HUD and cockpit art. And in that sense, the graphics are going to be really old school. They're kind of like a 320 by 200 resolution. That said, don't worry, the image is upscaled to your modern monitor resolution, so it still does look pretty good, even though it's an old graphical styling. And the music and sounds are kind of based on digitized samples, so it's going to take you right back to the era of Sound Blaster 16, all those fun things. And the control methods are supported to suit a wide variety of hardware. So you got keyboard, mouse, gamepad, and even full HOTAS support. So if you got it, you could probably fly Thunder Helix with it. And the controls are easy to set up. So you shouldn't have a problem binding even the fanciest of flight sticks, throttles, collectives, rudder, you name it, you could play it. So got you covered there. And as I mentioned, the game is in early access. And though the content's pretty limited, it's only one campaign and one free flight mission at the moment. More is planned to come throughout the early access period. So check out the roadmap in the Steam discussion section. And you can expect to see more campaign scenarios and stuff. And even a scenario editor is a possibility down the road. So that's Thunder Helix, again on Steam, $20. Looks like a real fun game. I'm looking forward to picking this up myself and giving it a shot. You know, if you're looking in between some of the more complex sims, this might be exactly what you're looking for. The other simulation I want to highlight this week, is Scramble Battle of Britain. Now, this is one to keep an eye on as it continues through its development cycle. It's currently being developed right now. You could follow the game on its Steam page. Again, that's Scramble Battle of Britain. What's unique about this one is Scramble Battle Britain is actually a turn-based tactical dogfighting game that takes place over the English Channel. So its focus is on military flight simulation, but it's not your standard hop in the cockpit and take it for a flight. That said, this game's in development by Slytherin, who have a great history of developing strategy in war games. Now, if you're like me, you love military flight simulation. You probably also love some more strategy-based games, and that's why I wanted to mention this to you today. So Slytherin's made some of my favorite games, including the recent Starship Troopers Terran Command, the Panzer Corps series, Battlestar Galactica Deadlock, Order of Battle World War II. Scramble Battle Britain's kind of a unique genre of sorts for them, and one that I think is really exciting to keep an eye on. So I mentioned it's a turn-based tactical dogfighting game. Kind of cool to put all those words together, right? So essentially what it's doing is breaking the chaos of dogfighting into short chunks of action. So it's set in a dynamic 3D airspace, okay? And then you have a simultaneous turn-based dogfighting game. So it's basically going to be three different phases where you help take control and command the aircraft to do loops, rolls, dives, as you quote-unquote kind of pilot the aircraft. So the first phase is the planning phase. That gives you like situational awareness of what's going on, what's where, and then you can actually zoom out to take in the full area and then understand how each plane and pilot fit into that battle space. And then you're going to have the simulation phase. So you planned out what you want to do, what kind of tactics you want to use, where you want the planes to go. The simulation phase is where it resolves those tactics in kind of a high speed, what they say, high speed hail of bullets and shredded aluminum, which just sounds cool. So that's where your turn actually plays out. And then finally, you have the review phase, and that allows you to kind of review all the action frame by frame, assess the battle damage, you know, identify pilots who need to get out of dodge. Maybe their aircraft's been shot up and they need to bail, or you can celebrate, you know, a nice victory for one of your aircraft shooting down another bandit. So whatever the case may be, those are the three phases. So planning, simulation, review. And then there are some pretty detailed simulation physics and subsystems at play here. So even though it's a turn-based game, they're not slacking in the simulation department. So aircraft are simulated down at the subcomponent level, they said, to offer an authentic World War II combat piloting experience. Bullets will tear through fuel tanks, radiators, engines, spring leaks, starting fires. Aircraft equipment will rip off, like ailerons and elevators, drastically altering the aerodynamics. Pilots will experience fatigue, blackout, and are vulnerable to any shots, as well as their mechanical components of the aircraft taking damage. So lots of stuff going on under the hood here. Don't let that turn-based nature fool you into thinking this isn't actually a complex simulation. And as I mentioned, this is all centered around the Channel Defense campaign. So you're reliving the historic Battle of Britain here. You are stepping into the shoes of an RAF squadron commander. So it's going to be from the British perspective. So you can recruit, train pilots, you know, rely on the leaders, the ones who have the battle experience to lead your team into the fray. You go on patrol missions in the channel to repel Luftwaffe raids. And then you can manage the pilots after the fact. So keep an eye on who's developing emotional strain, identify leaders, make promotions, things of that nature. So the aircraft plan for the first release of the game from the RAF perspective are the Spitfire, the Hurricane. On the Luftwaffe side, we'll see the Messerschmitt 109 and 110. And then bombers on the Luftwaffe side, we'll see the J-87, the J-88, and the Heinkel 111. So I got a great little video playing here in the show notes. You should go check it out on the Steam page. You'll see that video as well. Just a real great glimpse of what this game has to offer. And again, this game is Scramble Battle of Britain, being developed by Slytherin. I have the link to the Discord in the show notes and also to their YouTube page, which is youtube.com/@SlytherinGames. They also have, to go along with that YouTube page, three really cool episodes of Flight School so far, which is covering the series on a step-by-step basis. The first video covered the airplanes themselves. The second one, which I thought was most interesting in terms of learning about what's going on with the game, involved the gameplay phases. You can actually see what each phase looks like. And then third talked about the physics of flight that they'll be modeling. And underlying all this on a related note is the lead developer, John, I apologize if I say your last name wrong, but it's John Coughlin. He is helping develop Scramble Battle of Britain. He's actually got his own great indie flight game that I wanted to shout out real quick too, called Roger Meatball. So this is more of a relaxing, accessible flight simulation game, but it's got a really cool niche in the sense that it's focused on landing on an aircraft carrier. And as a former Navy bubba, I can't get enough of that. So this game is designed to be played with a controller. So set aside your fancy HOTAS flight controls for a second. It's just streamlined for a controller. But what's really fun about it is that's all it is. It's just flying the biplane around, landing on the carrier, but it has some really cool features. Once you land on the deck, it gives you a nice grade for how your approach was done, your virtual LSO, if you will, grades your landing. And what's cool is if you fly it with a second screen, you actually get a black and white plat cam that's going on the whole time. And one other unique element too, if you go check out the game on its website, which I've got linked in the show notes, is John included a zip directory with the game. So you can download it. This is all free. You can go check it out on his website. It's Coughlin John. So CoughlinJohn.itch.io /Roger Meatball. Or you can find it on the website, which I believe is just RogerMeatball.com. Probably should have led with that. That's the easier one. But he has an Arduino sketch for creating your own Fresnel lens instrument if you wanted to fly along with that, which I just think is really, really cool. So shout out to John for a great little indie title that's called Roger Meatball. And that wraps things up on the developer side, so let's kick it over to the hardware side.
Flight controls.
So hardware news, if you can move it, toggle it, push it, or rotate it, hardware news is where we're going to talk about it. And starting things off this week, we have On Your 12, the owner of an Etsy store focused on SimPit-related hardware. He announced the release of the F-14 ACM panel. So that upfront panel, right staring you in the face when you hop in the F-14, he's got a great version of it for sale on his website. So if you're not familiar with On Your 12, it's a great store run by Justin over there who offers a variety of replica additions to for your flight sim setup. So the F-14 ACM panel also joins the pilot display control panel he has over there. as well as the popular F-15 UFC panel. So if you're a recent owner of the Strike Eagle, go sure to check that out. That could be really valuable for you. Now, there's no digital display in that panel, but that helps keep the cost down as he's got all the assorted buttons and switches you'll need there. Also has for sale the F-16 ICP, the F-18 upfront controller, and probably the piece of equipment I actually like the most, which is the F-18 master arm panel. It just sits off to the side. But you got your air-to-air, air-to-ground master mode switches, the master caution, and then your master arm switch. So he's an established vendor over there. He's got over 330 sales, 135 five-star ratings. That's Justin at OnYour12. You can find his store on onyour12.etsy.com. Justin, thanks for all the great things you're making for the community over in your store. Also on the hardware front from the community this week, we have a do-it-yourself ejection seat handle from Boffin3212. So he posted about this on Hoggett earlier this week, the Hoggett subreddit, said for the DIY simpeters, he just updated his Colts project to include a second version of his ejection seat handle. So if you're not familiar with Colts 3D, that's a site where DIY project owners go ahead and post links for little projects you can develop. Some are free, some cost money. This particular project will run you $8.64. And what does it get you? Well, it includes a bill of material for switches and hardware, and includes the design you'll need to download and 3D print your own ejection seat handle. So how this is done, he does it all pretty easily with one micro switch, with one additional switch, and then a small microcontroller, a Cduino. I think I said that right. It's a small little chipset. It's like a little mini Arduino. You can buy it. I just checked online today for $11 on Amazon. And along with those bill of materials, you also get the wiring diagram you need and then the code to run this little Arduino. So everything you need to get this set up. And I mentioned there's two different versions you'll get in the package. One includes an arming switch, and one is a slimmed down version without it. If you don't really need to arm your ejection seat, you prefer to do that through another method. The current version also includes the mounting backplate for 4080 extruded aluminum. However, if you contact the designer, and the designer, I should have probably mentioned that before, is Shramtech. I think that's how you say his username on Colts 3D. He said if you contact him, he'll be happy to help you adapt this to your desired requirements. You know, in reason, as long as you're not having him completely redesign the whole thing. And if you have any trouble putting the parts together, or you're just not interested in doing this yourself, he said also contact him and he could probably sort something out with you. I don't think he's looking to necessarily turn this into a full Etsy store, but maybe there's an opportunity to do a one-off or two if you're interested. Again, that is the do-it-yourself ejection seat handle, and you can find it on colts3d.com/en/users/SCHRAMTEK, Shramtech. So again, probably easier to go to show notes, but for those of you who are just listening, spell it out for you there. So it looks like a great setup. Thank you so much for putting this together for the community. I actually am planning to buy this design myself and add it to my own cockpit. I know we've talked about ejection seat handles, I feel like, a lot, which is a rather strange thing, given all the button boxes we have available to us in the community. But, you know, kind of a fun little addition to the cockpit. So that's what it's all about. All right. On the major developers in the hardware community standpoint, I guess you'd say, as I mentioned in the flyby, Verpal is having a flash sale for its Easter weekend. So get 10% off your Verpal controls from all their web stores this weekend. You want to use code Easter10 at checkout. And again, that's on sale through a Monday at midnight, UTC. Also on the Verpal front, they released an instructional video. And I highlighted this because I feel like this might be one of the first instructional videos I've seen Verpal do. This particular video is for their counterbalance. So installing the counterbalance on their collective, a piece of equipment we have talked about before here on the show. I know VKB loves to do installation videos, for which I'm very grateful. That's been very helpful for me with my VKB gear. As the owner of the counterbalance for my own collective, I should probably watch this because I think it's still sitting in the box. Yeah, I'm horrible about getting around to some of that stuff. But overall, I thought this video was great from Verpal in terms of I love to see them adding this to their repertoire, giving more instructions to the community. Most of their gear is pretty straightforward, but you know what? Never hurts to have a video to go along with it. That said, it was a little too overproduced for my taste. You know, it's got the music, it's flashing back and forth between things really quickly. I think I kind of prefer real-time narration when you're doing installation guides. Like, just walk around, do it with me in real time, man. That makes it a little easier for my old brain, I suppose. But that said, thank you, Verpal, for putting this out. They are soliciting input on what their next guide video should be. So if you have any feedback for them, let them know in their video's comments. And you, again, you can find this video on YouTube at Verpal Controls. That's V-I-R-P-I-L Controls. Okay, so that wraps things up for hardware news. Now we're going to let's transition to the portion of the show where we highlight the work of people just like you, the community.
Really not track it, what they're doing exactly.
So community news is where we cover the latest goings on of the community, from campaigns and mods to servers, software, and everything in between. Kicking things off this week, we have a Keybinds manager software for DCS. That's the DCS Keybinds Manager, developed by Niru, N-I-R-U, over on GitHub. So what is the purpose of the DCS Keybinds Manager, you might ask? To which I say, good question. This is when you want to back up and import your keybinds. So if you're one like me who tends to move their controllers around, plug them into different USB ports, or maybe you switch to a new computer, whatever the case may be, well, this will help with the management of any unique UID, with any UUID changes. So, you know, anytime Windows recognizes a device has moved, it will switch UUID. So at a simplified level, let me rephrase this so I don't get it wrong. Niru, I saw your notes on your GitHub. I want to make sure I say this right. At a simplified level, Windows differentiates between devices by assigning a random or unique UUID to a device to a USB port. So the way this can be a problem for you is DCS saves these keybinds on a per module, per device basis. So if that UUID changes for whatever reason, your previous keybinds won't load and you get the default binds only. I'm sure you've experienced that before. I know I have. You hop into DCS, you log in, you're like, whoa, all my keybinds disappeared. One possible cause of that problem would be your UUID change and you just need to fix it. So, well, what's the solution to that? Well, you can go and update all these UUIDs manually. So you can go in and load the modifier.lua file. You can go find your saved device configurations, the Lua for that, and go change all the UUIDs manually. Now, if you only have a couple of devices, like you got a joystick and a throttle, maybe that's not a problem. Or you only fly one aircraft, not a problem. You can do that pretty easily in Notepad++. Or I think it's two pluses, Notepad++. There we go. But if you have a lot of devices and a lot of modules like me, I mean, if you have Flaming Cliffs 3, right, that's 9 modules alone. So that's a lot of separate key bindings go around. That becomes pretty tedious. So that's where DCS Keybinds Manager comes in. It's an auto hotkey script that will do all of this before you. All you need to do is tell it where the backup folder is located. It's going to scan a list, identify all these currently connected devices, and boom, it's going to import them. It'll back up things, replace the UUIDs as necessary. And even better, it would allow you to back up your current keybinds to a timestamp zip file for safekeeping if you ever need it again to import later on down the lines. And you can even allow then at that point to share these keybinds with others who have the same device as you. So, you know, you have the Thrustmaster Warthog throttle, or you have the Verpal stick, same device, boom, you can share keybinds now. So hopefully I didn't completely butcher that. It is a very cool tool. I encourage you to go check it out on the GitHub page. That's Niru-27, Niru-27. He has a project called DCS Keybinds Manager. I think it's going to be a real lifesaver for those of you who have a lot of USB devices, if you're anything like me. So thank you very much, Niru. Well done. A great piece of software. Okay, shifting things over to the IL-2 scene. IL-2 Great Battles. Want to talk to you about a group called the Flying Tin Cans. So on Reddit earlier this week on the IL-2 Sturmovik subreddit, a user asked, what's the best way to enjoy IL-2? And it had some great discussions, but one that stood out to me was a link to the group called Flying Tin Cans. So they're at flyingtincans.com. And who are they? Well, they're a group of like-minded individuals who come together to take part in a virtual flying experience in the IL-2 series. So They have a continuing campaign that takes place every Sunday at 1900 UTC and lasts for about 3 hours. It's multiplayer and player versus player. So the interesting thing about it, though, is it's got virtual pilots from all around the world taking part in this campaign, but it's how they set up the players. So they got pilots forming 9 different squadrons of about 12 to 14 pilots each that make up both the Allied and the Axis side in the campaign. And each mission in their campaign is handcrafted by a team of dedicated researchers, mission designers, builders, who take the day-to-day operations of a historical theater and bring them into life in the game for their pilots to enjoy. I just thought that was a really unique concept for a multiplayer group, especially in the IL-2 world. So how would you join if you're interested? Well, there's no extensive joining procedure. You just go to their website. Again, that's flyingtincans.com. And there's no mandatory training or assessment period. You simply post on their forums, and they give you all the information you need. So go over there, make a profile, post in their welcome form, which I have linked in the show notes. The only requirement that you have, there's no requirements, there is one. The only requirement you have to do is you just have to be able to take off and land. All the other training for everything beyond that point, including basic maneuvers, formation flying, it's all going to be provided by the club. And how do they do that? Well, they recommend you join them for squadron training, which is Thursdays at 1900 UTC or later. So that's currently 3 p.m. Eastern in the U.S., I believe, with daylight savings time and effects. So this might not work for those in the U.S. time zone. I'll be honest, I'm not sure. You'd have to go reach out to the team over there. I did include a link to the Discord and the YouTube page for this group, which is youtube.com/@flyingtincans2228. So 2228. They have a great video about what their campaigns look like. I encourage you to reach out to the group if you're interested. Find out more about them. Find out if there's alternative training options, if you're more U.S.-based and can't quite make it that early in the day. Although I think the Sunday option is a real nice one for most people when it comes to flying a campaign. So I love to see groups like this that exist and doing fun things for the community. So thanks a lot, Flying Tin Cans group, for all you're doing for the IL-2 Great Battle scene. Okay, shifting things back to the DCS side, I found another interesting post on the Hoggett subreddit, which was how to find more missions and campaigns to fly. So a user on the subreddit there asked how they could find more missions specifically for the AH-64 Apache in DCS. And this is always something that's near and dear to my heart. I'm always looking for new and interesting ways to enjoy DCS or any other military flight sims for that matter. But I realize I kind of take it for granted, and I think I've mentioned it before, but maybe not in detail, is the DCS user file page. So this came up quite a bit in that subreddit post. So if you never heard of it, the DCS user file page is essentially a treasure trove of user-created content hosted on the official DCS website. So what you want to do is go to the DCS website, so digitalcombatsimulator.com, and then look for the user files there. So if you see that, it's going to allow you to filter by aircraft to make things so much easier for you. So if you go there and you want to know, hey, I'm interested in a new skin for the F-14, boom, you can go ahead and do that. If you're looking for missions, boom, you can do that on an aircraft by aircraft basis. So again, digitalcombatsimulator.com. At the top there, you're going to see the various product pages, home, news, products, downloads. You want to go to downloads. And then when that drop down pops up at the bottom, you'll see user files, and that will unlock this treasure trove, like I said, of user created content. You can sort by type. So I'm interested in only campaigns or skins or multiplayer missions versus single player missions. I'm only interested in missions that relate to the Caucasus map, or I'm only interested in AH-64 missions on the Caucasus map that support multiplayer. You know, it's a pretty amazing ability to filter things down. In fact, someone already did this for you, and I have a link in the show notes for an AH-64 filtered list right off the start. But tons of content. As of last check, I think I saw there's over 3,000 single-player missions, over 1,100 multiplayer missions, lots of content. But then one other user took it to the next level, Daryl Dom, D-A-R-Y-L-D-O-M, actually highlighted some specific AH-64 missions that he thought would be really useful to the community. The first one is Operation Hellenic Dawn. The second is Stolen Content. Both of those are single-player and multiplayer missions. And then the third is Apache Hunting Ground. So I pause on that note to say this is arguably a mission that deserves its own full episode. So I think we'll talk about that more in depth next week, but that's the third one to round out the list he recommended. Highly encourage you to go check out all three of those, and we'll focus more in detail on the Apache hunting ground in next week episodes. That said, what are some missions that that are your favorites, or what would you recommend? And it doesn't even have to be for DCS. It could be for IL-2, BMS, a little bit different there. You have a whole campaign to work with, right? But if there's other flight sims that you have specific missions or mission generators or anything of that nature that you think would be valuable, share with the community, let me know. Reach out to the show. You can always contact me on social media at the Hangar Bay Pod on Twitter or Instagram, or you can send me an email at feedback@thehangarbaypod.com, or just leave them a note on the YouTube video. I always read every comment there and reply, so let me know what you think. Okay, shifting things over now, we're back with another video from Aviation Plus, this time about DCS. How does the F-16 RWR really function? So he came out with this video earlier this week, and while I enjoy flying the F-16, I wouldn't say I'm an expert on it by any means, so this probably would have actually gone below my radar until this video pointed out something that's really interesting, almost a public service announcement of sorts for the F-16 drivers out there. So the F-16 RWR uses a three-stage method of showing you threats. So it's got three threat rings, if you will, when you look at it. And those three stages are search, track, and launch. And that's how it determines the positioning of the threats in the rings of the RWR. But this is in somewhat contrast to the other RWRs in the game, specifically like the A-10 and the F-15E, which adjust the position based on radar signal strength. So in other words, the closer it thinks it is to you based on signal strength, the closer it will appear on the RWR. The F-16 is actually much more similar to the F-18 in that sense. It's based on what is the threat doing rather than where is it. And the reason this became its own video is kind of this kind of subtly changed, and I think Aviation Plus points out that was never really in any patch notes. It was almost just a subtle change where in a previous version of the manual, I think about the 2022 timeframe, it was more of your traditional radar signal strength as how it impacted where it appears in the RWR. And as of the latest manual update in April 2023, the logic is now one of search, track, launch. So the outer area of the RWR is where radar threats will appear when they're in search mode. The second inner ring is where threats will move to when they're in track mode or when they've locked you up. And then finally, they'll move to the center or the tightest area around you in the middle when the radar threats are in missile guidance mode or they've activated, you know, a missile's been launched and it's homing in on you. So what is the issue here, and why does this even deserve a video, and why am I talking about it? You're like, oh my gosh, who cares about the RWR or the F-16? Well, because in some ways, if you're not expecting this change, or if you haven't read the RWR manual or said the portion of the manual for the RWR in detail, you would just think a threat that was closer to you would likely be one that appears to be closer to you on the RWR. That's not the case here. And specifically what we're trying to reference here is if an SA-10 is 50 miles away from you, and this is a great example that Aviation Plus uses, if that SA-10 locks you up 50 miles out, it is going to appear closer to you on the RWR than a MiG-29 in search mode who has not locked you up, but maybe is only 2 miles behind you on your 6. So it's somewhat counterintuitive in that you might think the MiG-29 on your 6 at 2 miles, even if he's in search mode, is likely a greater threat to you than an SA-10 who locked you up 50 miles out. Well, that's not the way it's operating. And, you know, if you're interested, there is a full forum post on the DCS forums that I'll have linked to in the show notes where this gets into a discussion. There's several pieces of there's several notes from the developers, including others and users, going back and forth on which is the correct method. I'm not necessarily going to get into that. It's an interesting discussion, and I can honestly see both sides. But it's just an interesting observation to note, one that I wasn't aware of. So Aviation Plus, thank you so much for bringing it up that video. I thought the testing you did to show how threats move from ring to ring was very, very interesting. And one final note that I thought was probably the most interesting is, So you're supposed to transition from the second ring to the third ring when a threat goes from locking you up to then engaging you with a missile. It does not appear to work that way in game at the moment. I don't know if it's a bug or not, but essentially there is no middle ring. So you're either in the outer ring and search, or the minute a target locks you up, it's going to move to that very inner ring, and it will remain there if a missile is launched at you. So that's one final piece to note there. So that was How Does the F-16 RWR Really Function by Aviation Plus. Check out his video. Let him know you heard about it on the Hangar Bay. You can find his YouTube page at youtube.com/@aviationplus. Okay, that wraps up the community news. Let's shift things over to the user content of the week.
They just blew themselves up.
So sometimes it's a mission, sometimes it's a tutorial, and sometimes it's just an interesting topic of conversation here in the content of the week. And this week we have for you the DCS web editor and viewer. So if you're not familiar with it, the DCS web editor, which is dcs-web-editor.github.io, or as I would encourage you to do, just come to the show notes. I got a variety of links here for you. What we're talking about here is how would you like the option to view and maybe even edit DCS missions in a web browser? You could collaborate with your buddies. You can edit the missions together, see their changes in real time, leave feedback, all without having to enter the painful DCS web editor. Powerful, yes, but relatively painful if you're new or haven't experienced it before. It can be a little overwhelming. Well, the web editor slash viewer has you covered. So the one feature I think I love about this the most is the web editor, aka a web mission editor, has a 3D element. That's right. You can actually see the entire DCS landscape or the world, if you will, while you're editing your missions. So you're looking for that just that right place to put a unit. Boom, you can see it in the web editor. You want to have access to a templates of SAM networks, but you're looking for just that right spot. Boom, you can drop it in via the web editor. So there are two versions of this software currently. The DCS Web Viewer, that has been released. It's available to the public. That's intended for showcasing missions, so you can drop, see what's going on, where mission assets are located, and for mission planning, it has no ability to edit or change the mission. So you can load up a mission, see everything you want to see, but it's not, you don't have any editing capabilities. On the other hand, the 3D editor, you can change or even create new missions. Now, that is not available to the public because that is in an alpha state. So if you want access to that, you have to be a contributor, developer, a patron, or a sponsor. You do, however, get a 7-day free trial of the web editor. If you want, you can go to their Patreon, which is patreon.com/DCSWebEditor. Now, in the future, the plan is to make the web editor, as well as the viewer, free to the public. So they'll be released for free after the closed alpha and beta are complete. So there's a couple other FAQ items they have on their page. You know, if you're interested in supporting the developers, how can you do that? Well, if you're interested in actually contributing to the development of the software, reach out on their Discord page, which I have linked in the show notes. You can also, as I mentioned, contribute via their Patreon, which we just mentioned a moment ago. And this just looks like a fantastic piece of software for the DCS community. The ability to visualize the missions is one thing, but man, seeing the editing capabilities of this software, I don't think I fully did this even, you know, 30%. I'm probably just scratching the surface here in terms of the capabilities of this software, which is why I included a wonderful video they released a few months ago on their YouTube page, and that's youtube.com/@DCS-web-editor. You got to go check it out for yourself and see just how powerful this thing could be in terms of unlocking capabilities for even novice mission designers like myself. But the other reason I want to mention this week is because it's particularly apt in light of the Afghanistan map announcements. Is they, if you go to the DCS web viewer by default, you can actually see the outlines of where all the current maps in game are. They have a full map of the world, outlines of what the low fidelity version of every map is, and then the detailed high fidelity version. So it's very, very cool to see the overlaps between maps. So if you're interested, like where does Syria overlap with Sinai, or where does now the soon to be Persian Gulf map potentially overlap with Afghanistan, just how big is the South Atlantic map? Spoiler, huge. You can see all that on the DCS Web Viewer. So fantastic piece of software from the wonderful team at DCS Web Editor. Go check out the great piece of software they're working on for the community. Okay, shifting things over now to this SimPit Spotlight.
You don't see any big stream and flames or smoke coming out, do you?
So it's time for my favorite segment of the show, where we highlight a community member's personal SimPit setup, no matter how simple or complex, to celebrate the joy of flying from home. And this week, we have one of my favorites, Hunchy. So Hunchy made me some of my favorite DIY videos when I first got into building my SimPit several years ago. Sadly, he has not posted on his YouTube page in a while, but I still think his videos are fantastic sources of inspiration for aspiring DIYers, or if you're just someone like me that wants to come revisit a quality video with some really quality ideas from time to time. So thank you, Hunchy. You can find his YouTube page at youtube.com/@Hunchy, H-U-N-C-H-Y, _TheSimGamer. Got it linked in the show notes for you, along with a picture and several cool videos that I picked off of his YouTube page that I think highlight some of the coolest things he's done. He also, it can be found on Reddit from time to time. He's very active over there. And that's where I snagged his latest cockpit picture, which just looks fantastic. So he's got his verbal throttle, his VKB throttle levers. So the three traditional throttle axes is over there. He's got a left-hand VKB stick, looks a Cosmos SEMA. In the center there, it looks like he's got the MCG Ultimate from VKB on his VKB base. And then he's got one, two stream decks, two Thrustmaster MFDs. No, make that three, A10 UFC, and then just custom button box panels galore. It's a beautiful thing. So again, highly encourage you to go check out his YouTube page. Check out the show notes for the full picture. And I think the coolest part about his YouTube page is his videos go back so far. You can really see the evolution of his cockpit over time and how he's swapped hardware in and out, expanded the design. I mean, essentially the initial version of it was just, which was even great when it first started, was just an extruded aluminum cockpit frame to hold his throttle, a keyboard, and two Thrustmaster MFDs kind of rotated down into place. And then to see what he's done from a custom button panel box standpoint in the years to follow is just really, really cool. So Hunchy, you were always an inspiration for me. Thanks for the great videos, man. Hope you're doing well. And I hope to see you back on YouTube again in the future. Make some more videos. I know we'd all enjoy them. Okay, so that was the SimPit Spotlight. Let's shift things over to the listener feedback portion of the show.
612, departure radio check.
So I just want to give a quick shout out to all of those who have reached out in the previous week. Tell me how much you're enjoying the show. I can't tell you how much I'm appreciative of your kind words and support. I know I'm still kind of finding my voice in the show. I hope you're enjoying the content. And I hope you continue to provide listener feedback moving forward. You know, it's always so helpful to hear from you. And specifically, I hope you guys start reaching out to provide more in terms of what content you'd like to feature on the show. You know, if there's someone you'd like to see that's deserving of the spotlight in the SimPit segment for the week, let me know. If there's someone who's doing some great things and they should be highlighted in the community news, let me know. I also want to give a specific shout out to Rob from the Air Combat Sim Podcast and Authentic Media, as well as Sedlow and Aviation Plus for helping me to promote the show. Guys, that really means a lot. And I thank you for using your channels to get the show a little bit more visibility. You know, the show is really a celebration of the community, and that's really what it's here for. So it's great when more community members are aware of it and can enjoy it. And hopefully we can continue to highlight more great things that community members are doing each and every week. So you'll hear it in the outro as well. But if you do have feedback for the show, once again, you can email me feedback@thehangarbaypod.com, a voice message on Spotify, comments on the YouTube page, or hit me up on Instagram or Twitter @thehangarbaypod. And that concludes things for another episode of The Hangar Bay. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. We'll be back next Saturday, as we always do here, to get you squared away with all the latest military flight simulation and hardware news. And until then, think about what you put out into the community. Make it a better place. Fly safe, everyone.
Roger that. Let's go down low, out of deck. Unload 500 knots. Let's get out of here.
The missile knows where it is at all times. Oh, I'm sorry. What I meant to say is that you can find the video show on YouTube or on Spotify at The Hangar Bay Pod. The audio show is available on all major podcast providers. You can contact the show via email, feedback@thehangarbaypod.com, or on Instagram and Twitter @thehangarbaypod. Show notes and links to everything discussed on this week's show are available at thehangarbaypod.com.